You are back with The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. This morning, we have the pleasure of having Senator Brian Schatz with us, but he can only spend the first part of this hour with us. So if you have a burning question, ask away by calling in or emailing. Call 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 on the Neighbor Islands or email talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, Catherine. How are you doing?
Good. You know, I would be remiss if I didn't mention, because just minutes ago we had a successful landing of a rover on Mars. Can you believe it?
It's so incredible. I just saw the footage online, you know, the footage of the control room with the sort of thrilled NASA scientists in the control room, like they just won the Super Bowl, and they did. So very cool. Congratulations to NASA and everybody that was involved. And just a reminder that that scientific discovery is part of our great American tradition. And hopefully this inspires a new generation to study hard and to find new things in our universe.
Yes, and we will be talking with a Hawaii scientist who had a part in that mission later today. So, it's just a tremendous day. It's something that we can all be proud of as a country.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, I have to ask, I'm glad you're here at home and you're staying warm, because I just saw in D.C. it's like 32 degrees, it's snowing, and they declared, a snow emergency day. You know, but I don't know, what was it like when you were flying back home? You know, I don't know if the planes were full, but you probably saw like the shuttered vendors at the airport. You know, we're all still struggling, and we're pretty hopeful about, you know, what's in this relief package that's poised to pass.
Yeah, it's been, the weather's always awful in D.C. in January and February, so that's nothing new. But we are excited about the possibility of passing a relief package. There is broad agreement about what ought to be in it, and we're getting to the sort of last elements. But broadly speaking, there's going to be money for state and county government, for vaccine distribution, to meet people's basic needs. That includes food and rent and transportation to survive the next couple of months, and of course more support for our small and medium-sized businesses through the PPP program and a couple of new programs that are going to be established. So it's a big package. We feel like this package is going to have to last us, you know, not just a couple of months, but maybe half the year, and that's why the dollar amount is larger. But you know, Hawaii will greatly benefit if we're able to get this done probably in the first week of March.
And I know, you know, there is concern that, you know, you can't help everybody, and the bill probably doesn't cover aid to everybody. There are probably some things that have just, fallen through the cracks. But definitely, you know, as the lawmakers prepare to vote on this thing, that we can get that money soon into the hands of the businesses and the nonprofits that need it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, this pot of money is likely to be a little more flexible than some of the previous pots of money. And I think we've learned through this process that, you know, it's nice to do eligibility determination and try to figure out, you know, who's quote unquote worthy of the money, but if that's going to take 6 months to figure out and administer, you know, it's just better and wiser in an emergency such as this to assume that people need help, and to assume that everybody needs at least some assistance to get through this dark period. And will there be a few people getting $1,400 checks that maybe don't need it? Yeah, I think that's likely, but I think that that is still way smarter policy than creating a bunch of hoops for people to jump through, and then it takes 120 or 180 days for them to get the money that they need to, you know, pay their bills, stay in their apartment, buy their groceries.
You know, and I know some folks who maybe have jobs and don't really need the money are turning around and donating them to places like the food bank, you know, or agencies that that need the help that can spread the aloha around the community.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, look, if you've got extra cash, that's a wise way to use the money. But I think that the lion's share of people in the state of Hawaii are in some form or fashion suffering. You know, parents are having a terrible time trying to balance their professional obligations, if they have a job, with online schooling. Kids are having an awful time staring at that screen, trying to stay focused all day. Teachers have it real hard because some of them are having to figure out how to deliver an online education. And, you know, small businesses are suffering. There's just not a category of person in the state of Hawaii who isn't, you know, really feeling the impact of this pandemic. And I do think this money will help.
Yeah, and my heart really breaks for the kids. I mean, I know my kids both went to private and public schools. And, you know, we've been in contact with HAIS, the Association of Independent Schools. And a lot of those schools are already back in the classroom, but not so much for public schools.
Yeah, I mean, some of that is a resource question. And some of that was that the Department of Health was, and the Department of Education had been following a CDC guideline. But that guideline just changed. And the CDC is now saying that we are in what they're calling the blue zone, which basically means we have low enough COVID rates that they recommend that we reopen schools, even if you can't always maintain 6 feet of social distancing. There's nothing particularly magical about 6 feet versus 4 feet. You know, lots of other countries recommend 3 feet. And the idea is to maintain whatever distance you're capable of maintaining. But in a place where there's, you know, a very, very small COVID rate, the public health equities and the public policy equities, I think, heavily are weighted towards reopening the schools wherever possible. We're going to have to make accommodations. You know, there are teachers and students who will need accommodations to make sure they're safe and can do their job as a teacher or a student. But for the most part, I think everybody's in agreement that in-person delivery of education is better than doing it through a screen.
And you've reached out to the teachers union with the DOE, you know, just to talk about, you know, finding that middle ground and moving forward.
Yeah, I've had really good constructive conversations with Dr. Kishimoto, through my staff, with the Department of Health leaders, with the Lieutenant Governor and the Governor, and Corey Rosenlee from HSTA. So, you know, is this going to be hard? Sure. Will there be little disagreements as we go along? Yeah. But what I was pleased to know is that there's not a single person in a position of authority who is saying we shouldn't or cannot open schools in the fourth quarter of this academic year. Now, it could be real hard, and there could be individual principals who decide not to do it in the fourth quarter. But I think we owe it to these kids to do everything that would be necessary for the purpose of opening. And then if the COVID rates spike or it just ends up not being achievable, well, at least we've tried our best to deliver some modicum of in-person education. So this week was good in the sense that we've got everybody sort of on the record saying the right thing. Mm-hmm. Now it's logistics, and these logistics are you know, no small thing.
And you know, Senator, I did get a chance to talk to the rest of the Hawaii delegation, you know, when we saw the siege happen at the Capitol. I didn't get a chance to talk to you directly, but we were all worried for your safety. And I understand that you were on the Senate floor that day. And I think for me, when I saw that the video of the officer Eugene Goodman, you know, how he put himself in danger to help protect those lawmakers there in the chambers, I mean, I was just dumbfounded, just so amazed at his heroic efforts.
Yeah, I mean, my sort of personal experience was so different from how I processed it a couple of days later, because, you know, I was on the Senate floor. They shut down the doors to the Senate chamber, and there are probably, I don't know, a dozen or more of the doors. They yelled, "Lockdown, lockdown," shots fired, and you could hear something. And now I know that was Officer Goodman redirecting the crowd away from us and saving the United States Senate. But I didn't know any of that at the time. All I heard was noise and instructions, and then they quickly moved us in a single file line on foot to a safe location. And so I never personally felt imperiled, and that's not the case for a lot of House members or even a couple of senators who just found themselves in a different office, not in the chamber, adjacent to the insurrectionists, you know, hiding under a desk. But my experience was, I mean, I was alarmed for the country, but I never felt personally endangered. And then I started to kind of understand exactly how this all went down because there's so much video evidence, and to kind of process the fact that, you know, this was a real near miss. This was, we were physically in danger, and certainly American-style democracy was in danger. And so I'm just hopeful that Speaker Pelosi's proposal for a 9/11-style commission to get to the bottom of all of it with subpoena authority will go forward. And I think there has to be accountability for the extent to which the propagation of a lie that said that this election was not fair and free really caused people to take matters into their own hands and foment an attempted revolution.
Do you think we should keep those barriers up around the Capitol building?
You know, part of here's where I come down on that. My instinct is to say no, because I like our Hawaii Capitol and its openness, and I like the fact that you can, you know, you still have to go through a magnetometer in the U.S. Capitol, but you can walk right up to some of these Senate buildings and even get pretty close to the dome to check it out, because it's the citadel for democracy around the world. But I haven't gotten the law enforcement briefing about the kind of current threat environment, and so I would love to say definitively that these fences should come down, but I'd like to know that it is sufficiently safe to do that. But I do think eventually those fences should come down. We don't want to live in a democracy where our national legislature has to be fortified in that way.
You know, we mentioned at the top of the show that you've just been tapped as chair of Indian Affairs, chair of the Appropriations Subcommittee on Transportation, Housing, and Urban Development. That triggered a listener to call in. See if this voice sounds familiar to you.
Hi, my name is Mrs. Brady. I had a couple of questions for Brian. Actually, I taught he and his brother Stephen preschool. I'm delighted that he's Transportation and Indian Affairs. Anybody who doesn't understand Indian Affairs, just read Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee by Dee Brown or rewatch Dances with Wolves. Regarding the rail, no matter how much money federal and state has poured into this eyesore, there's never been any transparency or no accountability. It's kind of like writing a blank check. All of us that have a budget, we have to keep with the budget. We might go a little under, a little over, but we have to stay with it. This has just been bad money, way beyond the original quote. And it's such a blight, and it just keeps going. And now with the pandemic and nobody having jobs, I mean, I just don't see where we're going to even be able to pay for the upkeep, much less plow it down to downtown. It should have stopped at Middle Street, where it could pick up our world-class bus system. Anyhow, I'm so disgusted with that whole thing. I don't know why we do eyesores. You know, nobody's going to come here saying, can't wait to ride on the rail. How about seeing beautiful vistas instead of eyesores, like that Stairway to the Stars or Heaven? You know, make that doable, like the climb in Hawaii Kai. You know, fix it so that people would be willing to pay money like they do at Hanama Bay. We can make something like that beautiful and worthwhile going to see. I don't know, Brian. I'm just so disgusted with some of this stuff going on, the rail and the cost and what it's going to cost us for the upkeep. Anyhow, but I'm very encouraged that you're at the helm now and are so bright and capable. Your mom and dad did a great job with you and the rest of your family. Thank you.
So what do you think, Mrs. Brady?
Well, hello to Mrs. Brady, and thank you for the kind words, and I'll send your regards to my mother. On rail, I think, you know, she speaks for a lot of people in terms of the trust deficit that we now have between the community and HART in particular, and the city also. The sense is, and I think it's an earned view, is that we have been continually told a sort of magical story about how everything is going to work out, and that this is, you know, that we're just so close to being finished, and that, you know, it looks like with this new plan we should be A-okay. And we've been hearing that for year after year after year. And we don't just have a trust deficit with the community. there's also a trust deficit with the federal government, with the FTA. And so what I'm glad about is Lori Kahikina and Rick Blangiardi appear to acknowledge that and want to start from a baseline of, okay, what are our facts? What is the situation? And how much are we in the hole? And to not sort of paint an overly rosy picture, but to really figure out what the shortfall is. Then, in my capacity as the new chairman of the subcommittee, I can be useful in, you know, opening up lines of communication with the federal, with the FTA, and maybe even with the legislature and the council. But nobody is going to be willing to help if they can't trust the numbers coming out of Hart. And so the first step is for Lori and her team to develop a new financial plan and a new construction plan, and then tell us, you know, whether it can be done within existing resources, or if there are additional needs, what those are. But right now we're speculating, and I think that nobody really trusts the numbers. So Lori's going to have to, on behalf of the taxpayer of the City County of Honolulu, sort of be totally transparent and let us know where this project is at. And then Rick and Lori and the City Council and our local leaders are going to have to decide what the path forward may be.
Okay, and then we did get an email from James McKay, wants to know where you stand on Department of Hawaiian Homelands. He says that apparently 40% of the Navajo Indians don't have electricity on the reservation. Does anyone here at DHHL, are they, you know, keeping track of who doesn't, what Hawaiian homesteaders don't have electricity lines, you know, running to their homes? He says he's not advocating for grid connection, but off-grid solutions to address this need.
Yeah, so, you know, I've been working very closely with the Department of Hawaiian Homelands over the last several years because the federal funding that goes to them is called the Native Hawaiian Housing Block Grant. And they kept taking the money that we would get appropriated and literally put it in a pile and not spend it. They were investing in certificates of deposit, long-term financial instruments, not even trying to spend the federal funds. And it became very difficult for me to get more federal funds if all they were doing was sort of adding to their corpus. And I think things are turning around at the department. I'm not suggesting that things will go perfectly, but I do think under Chairman Ayla and his deputy, Tyler Gomes, there's a recognition that, yes, we need to work on putting people into homestead land in the most traditional sense, but there are also a lot of people who could benefit from programs that VHHL is permitted to do, rent relief, broadband funding, financial literacy. Those are all permissible uses of the federal funding that I've been able to get to the department, and especially in a pandemic. You know, we got $30 million in December for the department. And, you know, this is emergency money, and it has to be pushed out right away. We don't want this to end up being, you know, just an infrastructure project that would enable, you know, 20 or 30 homes to be built in 10 years. That's not what this money is for. This money is to provide relief to Native Hawaiians, both on the homeland and near the homeland. It doesn't have to be that they're on DHHL land to be eligible for some of these programs. So I believe they are open to a kind of transformation of the way they deliver services, and it's their call. They have their own commission, but I'm here to help and to try to get them money for it.
Okay, and we have a call coming in from Wailua. Ryan, you have a question for the senator?
Yeah, hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call, Senator Schatz. A lot of us on the North Shore are concerned with the DOTA pulling out of their lease with the Army with Dillingham Airfield and the 130 or so jobs and $12 million in revenue that comes to the North Shore. My question is, do you support keeping the airfield open for public use? And also, will you ally maybe with Representative Kaika Haley, who's kind of a championing for the cause, keeping it open? And that's my question. Thank you.
Ryan, thank you for the question, and I want to respect it sufficiently. I'm sorry I can't give you an off-the-cuff answer. What I can tell you is that I will talk to Kai right away. I'm somewhat familiar with this situation, but I didn't know when the federal government is pulling out and what the implications are and what the potential solution set is. But I will talk to Kai and we will get back to you.
Okay, we have another call coming in from the Big Island. Gary, what's on your mind?
Hi, thank you. First of all, I have two comments. I'll make them brief. As far as COVID, it's great that we're getting the vaccine out, but we need rapid tests. We've dropped the ball on that, and we continue to drop the ball. If we can test people, we can isolate them, we can keep them out of the workforce and out of the schools, and we can beat this thing real quick. My second comment, and please don't take this out of your public friends, but
you know, we've got some audio issues there. I think a second question was, don't play ball with the Republicans. Do what we need to do. But do you want to address his concern about testing, Senator?
Sure. He's right about testing. And let me sort of address, you have a better ear than me, Catherine, training in the radio. I didn't catch the second question. But if it's sort of do what you need to do as it relates to COVID relief, I think that's right. Look, one of the things that I find most enjoyable about the United States Senate is that because of our weird rules, it actually is almost a requirement to find a Republican co-sponsor for any legislation that you want to enact. There is one exception, and that is in this budget reconciliation process, you can do something with 50 votes plus the vice president to break the tie. And, you know, it's not my preferred way to get COVID relief done, but I am very clear that we do not have 10 Republicans who are going to vote for COVID relief, or at least not a sufficiently large package to get us through this crisis. And so, if I have to pick between getting something done and not getting something done, I'm always going to err on the side of getting something done. And would I prefer to have 15 or 20 Republicans voting with us? Sure, but that's really up to them, not up to me.
Okay, we only have about 2 minutes left. I don't know, any final thoughts?
Well, I just wanted to comment a little bit about the vaccine. I think that we've all been sort of worn down emotionally, intellectually by this pandemic. And so we're unaccustomed to good news because every time someone pops up with, you know, it's Regeneron or it's Remdesivir or whatever, it always sounds like some, you know, fake solution and some person, you know, with a pie in the sky idea about how we're going to, you know, get rid of this pandemic. But the vaccine is exactly that. The vaccine is an actual miracle of modern science. And there are going to be lots of them available a lot sooner than we could have reasonably anticipated. And the results are already taking hold in the state of Hawaii. And I just think it's really important that everybody feel personally good about getting vaccinated wherever they are in the tiers. Don't do something where you pretend to be noble and wait for someone else. Go get vaccinated. You are keeping other people safe as soon as it's your turn. And we've all got to engage in personal conversation with folks who may have their own reasons or reservations for not wanting to get vaccinated because, you know, 40% of the public being vaccinated is great, but that will not get us to herd immunity. So this first batch of people are almost by definition the people who want the vaccine. That last tranche, we're going to have to talk to folks and not just kind of insult them as anti-vaxxers, but to kind of engage with folks to let them know this thing is a miracle. It will save your life. It will save someone who you love from getting sick. And it will, at a minimum, even if you don't care about any of that or the risk around any of that, it will, at a minimum, enable you to get your life back, to get your social life back, to be able to hug your grandma, to go back to work. So I just think we all have a collective obligation to actually talk up the vaccine, even though over the last year it's been hard to talk up anything.
All right. Okay. Well, we thank you for your time. We wish you safe travels as you head back into the terrible weather there on the mainland. But stay positive and test negative, Senator.
Thanks very much. Take care.
Okay. Mahalo. We have been talking with Senator Brian Schatz here on Hawaii Public Radio.